Lot of G's, please. Jayakale, in the time of prominence. Two, indeed. Sattvasya, of goodness. Deva, the demigods. Rishin, and the sages. Rajasaha, of passion. Asuran, the demons. Tamasaha, of ignorance. Yaksha Rakshansi, the Yakshas and Rakshasas. Tatkala Anugunaha, according to the particular time. Ahabhajat, fostered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality, with which they are infused and surcharged by the Supreme Lord. Similarly, when the mode of passion is prominent, the demons flourish, and when the mode of ignorance is prominent, the yakshas and rakshasas flourish. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, fostering the reactions of sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamagun. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone. The conditioned soul is under the influence of the various modes of material nature, and behind material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one's victory and loss under the influence of sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamagun are reactions to those modes, not the Supreme Lord's partiality. Srila Jiva Goswami in the Bhagavat Sandarbha has clearly said, Sattvarayo na santiste yatra cha prakrita gunaha sa shudak sarva shudebhyak puman adyak prasidatu ladani sandani sangvit twayeka sarva sangstitau ladatapa karimishra twayino guna varjate. According to the statement of the Bhagavat Sandarbha, the Supreme Lord, being always transcendental to material qualities, is never affected by the influence of these qualities. This same characteristic is also present in the living being. But, because he is conditioned by the material nature, even the pleasure potency of the Lord is manifested in the conditioned soul as troublesome. In the material world, the pleasure enjoyed by the conditioned soul is followed by many painful conditions. For instance, we have seen that in two great wars, which were conducted by the Rajagun and Tamagun, both parties were actually ruined. The German people declared war against the English to ruin them, but the result was that both parties were ruined. Although the Allies were apparently victorious, at least on paper, actually neither of them were victorious. Therefore, it should be concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone. Everyone works under the influence of various modes of material nature. And when the various modes are predominant, the demigods or demons appear victorious under the influence of these modes. Everyone enjoys the fruits of his qualitative activities. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:11-13. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakasha upajayate ganam yada tada vidyad vivridam sattvamityuta lobha pravritir arambak karanam asamak spriha rajasye tani jayante vivride bharatarshava aprakasha pravritischa pramado moha evacha tamasye tani jayante vivride kurunandana. The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, uncontrollable desire, hankering, and intense endeavor develop. O son of Kuru, when there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, madness, illusion, inertia, and darkness are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart, simply gives the results of the increase in the various qualities. But he is impartial. He supervises victory and loss, but he does not take part in them. The various modes of material nature do not work all at once. The interactions of these modes are exactly like seasonal changes. Sometimes there is an increase of Rajaguna, sometimes of Tamaguna, sometimes of Sattvaguna. Generally, the demigods are surcharged with Sattvaguna, and therefore, when the demons and the demigods fight, the demons are victorious because of the prominence of their Sattvagun qualities. The demigods. However, this is not the partiality of the Supreme Lord. Alma Gyani Timurandasya Akananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Umilitangena Tasmai Shri Kurvena Maha Namang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Budalai Srimate Paladananda Swami Tone Namang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Budalai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tone Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pcharani Nirvishesha Shuni Vadi Paschyati Adesha Charani. So, thank you all for coming. It's always an honor to be able to serve the Vaishnavas. And please forgive me for my cough. So this is a very important chapter for all of us to understand here in the material world. It answers one of the main questions that many materialistic people ask. How can there be God if good things happen to, or bad things happen to good people, and conversely if good things happen to bad people? As if using that as some proof that either God doesn't exist or that God is really demoniac. So this chapter explains how God is not partial, how Krishna is not partial. Because that's what people are inferring by asking these kinds of questions. In this particular section of the chapter, it's being explained to Maharaj Parikshit that all these different subjective experiences that we undergo here in this material world, they're all a product of the three modes of material nature. So it's really not the partiality of Krishna whatsoever. Because it's explained elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita that we actually choose which modes of nature we fall under the influence of. Ultimately, we choose even to be under the modes of material nature in the first place. Because of prakriti, there's two different kinds of prakriti. There's pada prakriti and apada prakriti. The pada prakriti refers to the spiritual nature. It all ultimately comes from Srimati Radharani. It comes from the Shakti, from the energy of the Lord. And the Pada Prakriti is superior to the inferior nature, the Apada Prakriti. And the Jiva souls, which is what we are, belong to that Pada Prakriti. So, technically and in reality, we're superior to the influence of these different modes of nature. If we so desire, they will have no influence upon us whatsoever. It's just that we have to make the effort to get out of their sphere of influence, just like it's our desire to want to go swimming in a pool. So we dive in the pool. But once we're in the pool, if the pool is large enough and violent enough, we're almost at the mercy of the pool itself, even though we're superior to the pool. It's our will and desire that determines whether we're in the pool or out of the pool. So the different things that bring us into this pool and attract us to different qualities of nature within this pool of material nature, it's described in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 10. Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upashata bahavo jnana tapasa puta mad bhavam agataha. So being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So these are the things that keep us from Krishna, and being freed from these, they allow us to return back to Krishna. Vitaraga bhaya krodha. Attachment, fear, and anger. In the purport to this verse, Prabhupada gives a brilliant commentary on the manifestations of attachment, fear, and anger, and how really this is also the basis of Nirvishesha and Shunyavad philosophies too. In other words, impersonalism and voidism, where impersonalism and voidism actually arise from fear and anger. Out of fear, people become very, due to the experience in this bodily form of life and this human existence, they've been abused in so many different ways in the past. And because they don't appreciate the association of other individuals, they're afraid of having an individual experience, especially when they consider the nature of eternality. So when they consider being eternal in an individual state of existence, it's extremely fearful for them. So they therefore go to impersonalism. In other words, impersonal. There's no personal interaction. There's no individuals to have to confront, to have to deal with, to have bad experiences with. So this is also a materialistic concept of life because it's based upon a negative concept of the material world. And then out of anger, people turn to voidism. After being bewildered by so many different so-called sadhus and so-called spiritual practices, people in anger and frustration say, oh, there's nothing anyway. It's all just void. All this is nonsense. Everyone's just a cheater. Nothing really exists. So they turn to voidism. And then attachment, from attachment rises karma mamamsa philosophy, or the idea that by fruitive activities, I can increase the amount of pleasure I enjoy and I can decrease the amount of suffering that I experience. And so if we look around in the material world, these three concepts of life categorize the vast majority of all humanity. But, you know, we have a choice of how we associate with these different modes. We have to at least come to the mode of goodness to get out from the influence of these modes. It said elsewhere in the Gita, in the 13th chapter, text 22, Karnam guna sangosya. You know, we have a choice of associating with these different modes of material nature, guna sangha. So this is a very important concept to understand, guna sangha. Just like there is sadhu sangha, Sadhu Sangha means association with saintly people. And Prabhupada clarifies in many different places that sadhu actually means devotee. Sadhu doesn't refer to anything else. Sadhu doesn't mean associating with some, you know, Durga worshiper on some, you know, river in the Himalayas, or associating with some, you know, Shaivite in the crematorium, or associating with some like famous or powerful personality that feels spiritual. You know, there's so much false information out there during the whole hippie movement, particularly on the West Coast, led by Ken Kesey. They came up with this bogus theory that enlightenment means to spontaneously be and live and just do whatever you feel like and what comes spontaneously. Of course, this was fueled by massive amounts of drugs. But this is just bogus philosophy. You know, this is what's called animal life. If you look around what the animals are doing, the animals are spontaneously acting and just being, and it's so spiritual. When they feel hungry, they eat. When they get angry, they fight. So this is bogus. And this is obviously a product of the mode of ignorance. Ignorant understanding of what enlightenment is. So, sadhu means devotee. Means bhakta, who's engaging in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Prabhupada defines that very clearly. And so just like by associating with sadhus, with devotees, we get these saintly qualities also. So in the same way, when we associate with the gunas, with rajaguna, tamaguna, or sattvaguna, we also take on the qualities of these different modes of nature. So if we associate with the tamagun, then what's going to happen? Then ignorance, madness, illusion, and inertia and darkness will increase within our consciousness. Everywhere we look, we'll misunderstand what's going on, we'll misinterpret, misjudge, almost as if we're in our own little world, and that world is something very different from what's actually happening. For instance, you know, taking different kinds of drugs. It's very much in the mode of ignorance. It's explained that in the mode of ignorance, things begin very painful, and it ends very painful also. In the whole process of activities in the mode of ignorance, it's destructive. In the beginning stages, in the middle stages, in the end stages. So alcohol is a good example of something in the mode of ignorance. Alcohol is actually a poison. What alcohol does, because it's anhydrous, when alcohol comes in contact with your skin or with any cell in your body, because it's anhydrous, meaning it has no water in it, as soon as it comes in contact with a cell, because your cells are full of water, what happens is the difference is so strong that it actually ruptures the cell wall, and all the water of the cell comes out and it attaches to the alcohol. So what happens when a cell ruptures? It dies. So whenever alcohol comes in contact with any cell in your body, it kills any cell that it comes in contact with. So people get very drunk and they get lightheaded and tipsy and they think, oh, I'm having a great time. But really what's happening is that you're killing your body when you put this poison in it. And it's suffering so tremendously that your body bewilders you in the mode of ignorance. So you're illusioned as to the fact that you're actually killing itself. Because it hurts so much. And then later on when you wake up, you have a big hangover, or you peek out your stomach lining, or you have alcohol poisoning, you have to go to the hospital. I mean, there's just so many things bad with it. So that's a good example of the mode of ignorance. So in this way, we have to be very careful with what modes of material nature we associate with, especially as aspiring devotees. Because it's very easy to get caught up in these different things like anger, frustration, attachment. Somebody says one small little thing and we get so bent out of shape about it. Causes us so much trouble and turmoil. This is all according to the modes of nature. And it's all according to false ego. False attachment to this material body, which is composed of these three elements. So by giving up these different things, we can actually come to the perfectional stage of existence. And also another thing, tying in with today's verse, is by our association with these different modes of nature, that's also what carries us into a particular situation in our next life, which explains how bad things happen to so-called good people. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. In other words, if we carry a conception of life that's steeped in rajagun or tamagun or sattvagun, then that conception will carry over into our next lifetime. So, somebody who is very much in the mode of ignorance or mode of passion and doing a lot of bad things, in their next life they may be born in such a situation to where that same nature will carry over. But say in the next life they have some sort of epiphany or they want to be a good person. So they endeavor very hard, very diligently, associate with the mode of goodness, become a good person. And then society views them as some wonderful, shining example of what a good person is. But yet all these bad things are happening to them. And everyone's crying out, oh my God, how can there be a God? So many bad things are happening to this really good person. But what these people don't recognize is the fact that this so-called good person was a terrible person in their last life, and now they're simply suffering the reactions of all their previous bad activities. Just like if someone were to go to a prison and see different people in jail, some of them in jail may have reformed their activities to where they're actually quite good people, but they're still locked up behind bars. And then people decry, oh, how can this happen? Society is so cruel. There are so many good people in jail. Why are you keeping this good person in jail? But that's ignorant, because they're not taking into consideration the previous activities of that person who is put in jail. Similarly, a good person in one lifetime can take another birth. In their next birth, they can associate with the modes of ignorance and passion, and then engage in all kinds of terrible activities, but yet they're getting all these good things happening to them. Getting fabulous wealth, so many followers, good position in society, you know, beautiful wife or handsome husband. And people are thinking, how can this be? They're such a terrible person. They're basically a demon. But all these wonderful things are happening to them. How can this happen? So that's why it's very important to have a slightly larger picture other than the immediate moment. And to really think about things, carefully consider things. You know, so especially as aspiring devotees, when we're engaging in our sadhana, when we're engaging in our activities, you know, we have to be very conscious of just that, of our consciousness. You have to be very aware of what it is that we're thinking about, what it is that we're meditating upon. Because believe it or not, your body will follow wherever your consciousness is. Whether that be from this lifetime to the next, or even within this lifetime. For instance, there's that example of that one devotee. I forget who she's a disciple of. Some Indian Mataji travels around in Europe or Northern Africa somewhere, I forget. Anyway, in her previous lifetime, she was a devotee in Ireland, a brahmachari. Who was that? Oh, Scotland, I'm sorry, thank you. So she was a brahmachari in Scotland. And as a brahmachari in Scotland, this particular brahmachari was very lustfully attached to the idea of this one young Indian Mataji. And he just couldn't get her out of his mind. And just day after day, he was just like meditating upon her all the time. But yet he, for some reason, he didn't get up the courage to go and marry her and do the proper thing. Instead, he wanted to maintain the facade of being a brahmachari. And so what happened? They were driving home. He was driving home with some other devotees. He was in the passenger seat and got in a car accident. And he was killed. And nobody but the driver knew about the particular circumstances of his death. And the devotee who was driving never talked about it with anyone. So years later, many, many years later, there's this Indian girl. She's born into an Indian family. I think it was in London, wasn't it? And, you know, she grew up as a Hindu. And she didn't really think much about spiritual life, but then all of a sudden these really severe incidents happened. One time she was mugged and beat up severely in one park. And then all of a sudden she started to get these different inclinations for Krishna consciousness. And she started taking it seriously, and then, you know, she started having these dreams. And in her dreams she was dreaming of being a brahmachari. Somewhere in Scotland, going on Harinam. She was thinking, this is really weird. Why am I dreaming of my guy? And so it went on like this over the course of time, and gradually the dreams got more and more intense, so she asked her guru, you know, about it, and then she actually decided to go to Scotland and to confirm these things. So she actually tracked down that same devotee who was in the car driving at the time that the accident happened. And then she was giving all these details about the accident, and the devotee was just like flabbergasted, because it was so traumatic for him, you know, losing the life of one of the devotees serving under him. He never talked about it to anyone, so how could this Indian girl know anything about that accident? And then various, you know, different sannyasis and gurus confirmed that, well, yeah, this Indian girl was actually that brahmachari in her last life. And because when he died, he was thinking about this Indian girl, he carried that concept, that bodily concept of life, from that lifetime to the next lifetime. So when he took birth again, he took birth as an Indian girl in an Indian family. So that's why we all have to be very careful as to where our consciousness is. There's another devotee I know, I won't mention names, but one time he was in India, in Mayapur. He was taking a bath in the Ganges. And he hadn't been so strict about not watching television. So while he was taking bath, he got sucked under. Any of you who have ever been in the Ganges, you know that it's a very extremely powerful river. And it's notorious for having undertows, where you get in and the current just sucks you under, and there's nothing you can do about it. So that's what happened to him. He was sucked under. And then he was practically drowning. And the thought went through his head, any second now I'm about to leave my body. He was consciously aware that he was dying. And what was going through his head? Some jingle in television, something like double your pleasure, double your fun, something like that. And just then, a devotee friend of his was on the shore, jumped in and rescued him and saved him. From that moment on, he realized the importance of not watching television and not putting garbage like television or karmic music in his ears, because it pollutes your consciousness. He was about to die, and he was just remembering some stupid television commercial. Can you imagine you're about to die and you remember some commercial or like some stupid karmic song? I mean, that would be depressing. So you'd carry that same conception into your next life, and who knows where you'd go. Maybe you'd end up working for like some chewing gum factory or something. Who knows? So we really need to be very cautious and very careful about our consciousness. We all the time have to monitor it. Make sure that we're fixed upon Krishna. And we do this by studying intensely Prabhupada's books every day. Not just reading, not just skimming and glossing over with your eyes. Oh yeah, I read it. You know, studying. Prabhupada said study. He wanted us to study his books minimum 1 hour every day. And it's also very important to hear these books too. We have to hear in the association of devotees. That's why listening to lectures is so nice, like listening to lectures of Srila Prabhupada. They're so powerful. Simply by hearing, we get so much realization. But yet just by reading on our own, it's very difficult to really try to assimilate the stuff. So if we do study, it's very important to study in a group and to discuss this with other devotees. That way we hear actually what it is that we're reading. So by hearing, we'll actually understand better than simply by seeing words with our eyes. And then the same thing also goes with chanting. In addition to the studying, we need to chant. So by hearing and chanting, this is the purification process that actually extricates us out of this material world. So in there, if there's any quick comments or questions. Yes, Bhakta Larry. One minute. It's muted right now.
Check, check. All right. Well, yeah, I do have a question. Well, I know this person that did some very bad things like before, and like over the years, you know, I guess he wanted to get his life right and everything, so you know, he basically opened up his own restaurant, you know, he had his he has a house now and everything, but then, like, you know, a couple years later, he actually lost his house, and now his mother is, like, you know, in the hospital and stuff like that. I just want to know, does that have something to do with, like, you know, karma, basically?
Yeah, that's just karma.
Just bad, yeah. Karma? All right.
Yeah. Ganesh Prabhu?
Hello. Just want to make sure it was overseen this morning in the announcements. There is a Harinam today. 4:15, the van will be pulling out. At 4:30, we'll be proceeding to Venice Beach.
Arrivo.
Performing Harinam Sankirtan, and that will be above the three modes of nature.
Jai.
And it's fully authorized.
Bhakta Zach Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So in the verse, it says that in the mode of passion, demons are predominating. In the mode of ignorance, the yakshas and the rakshasas predominate. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between a demon and a rakshasa, the yaksha?
He's asking what's the difference between demons and yakshas and rakshasas. The top slider over. Yeah, thank you. So yakshas and rakshasas are demonic beings in the mode of ignorance. When it refers to demons, it refers more to daityas, like the sons of Aditi. The daityas and the danavas, those are considered the demons. And the yakshas and rakshasas, they're demonic also, extremely demonic, but they're in the mode of ignorance, just a different mode of nature. The rakshasas, for instance, they eat other people. So, it's pretty demonic. And then one last question from Bhakta Fred.
Something about the mind and things that happen to the mind.
Please use the microphone.
Like things that happen to the mind, you know, things that interfere with the mind. I don't know the concept. It's kind of like that. I just wanted to know the source. Could the source be something, you know, from, I don't know. I guess I forgot. I don't know.
Okay. Jai. Granta Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.